चैतन्य बाबा गुरुधर हरि चैतन्य बाबा गुरुधर हरि यशोर नंदन व्रज जन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुन तीर रण चारी यमुन तीर रण चारी
Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Parvrajikachar, Sakara Siddha Shri, Simanis Vine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Iskan Founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai, Gaura Premananda, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Ganga, Ma Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Sagadale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Pananam, Siswas Pran, Gaura Vandashma, Vishishishish. Hare Krishna. So as Madhumukhya mentioned, this is the 50th wedding anniversary, my wife and myself. And of course, I feel very fortunate. I've been blessed with a very wonderful wife and a very nice family. But the best thing is that they're devotees of Krishna. I really have to say that. Because when family members are devotees of Krishna, it increases that connection so much. It's so much more meaningful. It's really wonderful. And I just can't imagine having that same feeling, you know, if they were not devotees of Krishna. So I was thinking about that and in terms of a class for today, and what is the greater spiritual principle? And so the name of the title of today's class is We Are All Part of Krishna's Family. Because that is, I think, the important takeaway here, that we're not just part of an immediate temporary family in this lifetime, but really part of something much larger, much greater, much more wonderful. Yeah. So this brings us to today's verse, 14:4, Bhagavad Gita. Sarva yoneshu kunteya murtaya sambravantiya tasham brahma mahar yonir Aham bija pradapita sarva yonishu kunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasham brahma mahad yonir Aham bija pradapita. Others?
Sarva yoneshu kunteya, murtaya sambhavantiya,
Okay, translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It should be understood that all species of life, O Son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving Father. Purport. In this verse is clearly explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the original Father of all living entities. The living entities are combinations of the material nature and the spiritual nature. Such living entities are seen not only on this planet, but on every planet, even on the highest, where Brahma is situated. Everywhere there are living entities, within the earth there are living entities, even within the water and within fire. All these appearances are due to the mother, material nature, and Krishna's seed-giving process. The purport is that material nature is impregnated with living entities who come out in various forms at the time of creation according to their past deeds. Om Gyanat Prandisha Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksarun Mitamina Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Banchako Patubhischa Kripasindavivacha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. So Krishna is the father of every living entity, and the material nature is the mother of every living entity. So if every single one of us has a common father and a common mother, what does that mean? What is our relationship? Yeah, right? We're all brothers, sisters, siblings. We are all part of a family. We are all part of Krishna's greater family. So, when I said before, one of the most wonderful things that I've experienced with my family, which of course I'm very proud of, my daughters have been helping with the Sunday feast and making the sweet and so many things, so which is very nice. So I definitely feel like we are part of Krishna's family. But I also feel like this community, we are all part of Krishna's family. This is part of my family too, this Alachua Nuraman Reti family. But if I were a little more advanced, I would go beyond that. I would see that everyone in the city of Alachua is part of my family. All my neighbors are. And ultimately, all human beings. And beyond that, all living entities. Every single living entity, because Krishna is the seed-giving father, material nature is the mother for every living entity, whether one be plant, animal, human, demigod, or whatever. Now, most people, at least most human beings in Kali Yuga, they don't really see the broader aspect of this. They tend to recognize their own family members. Some of them may extend that to nationalism, a sense of the people in my country, or the people in my tribe, the people in my religion, the people, whatever it may be. Or even some people are humanistic and they try to feel some love for everyone, for all of humanity. But what about the cows and the pigs and the chickens? You know, who they're eating regularly. Not all, but you know, seriously, because it also means understanding not just the human species, but all species of life as described in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. All 8,400,000 species of life. Those different bodies were given by the mother material nature and the spirit soul injected by the seed-giving father by Krishna. So Prabhupada said in the purport that every living entity is a combination of material and spiritual energies. Material energy being the body that we have, the spiritual energy being the spirit soul, the Atma, which is injected within this body, which grows within this body, animates this body, gives life and consciousness to this body. So a devotee tries to understand this and have like a broader vision of what it means, you know, to be a human being, to be a spirit soul, to be a devotee of God. So, in our life, we tend to become absorbed in many relationships. We have our relationships in our family, our children, our husbands, our wives, our brothers, our sisters, our friends, our community members. These are all here, and this gives people great pleasure in life. I think I was mentioning in my last class, Sunday class, that you know, very few people are very happy being hermits and not having relationships. You know, it doesn't really work so well. Everybody wants relationship. Everybody wants to love and to be loved. But the problem is, in so many of those relationships, God is not central to them. Where is God? Prabhupada said, we want the kingdom of God without God in the material world. Isn't it? We want so many things. We appreciate, everybody appreciates those things that are godly. Everyone appreciates the opulences that God has given us. We appreciate so many people, whether they're believing God or not, appreciate the beauty of nature, right? They appreciate so many things that are God's opulences, but they don't attribute the cause to God. And that's the difficulty. So we look for those relationships to fulfill us, because relationships are natural to us. It is part of our nature. The nature of the spirit soul is not to be some isolated spark of Brahman floating in the universe, in the cosmic ocean. No. Our real identity is one of a spirit soul who is filled with love as well as knowledge and eternity, and experiences that love most completely in relationship with the Supreme Person, the Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada explains this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, ID 156, in the spiritual world there are five kinds of relationships with the Supreme Lord: Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The perverted reflections of those rasas are found in the material world. They're distorted reflections of the original pure sentiment, which should be understood as perfect in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. If these rasas are established with Lord Krishna, the result is eternal blissful life. So everything that we experience in this material world, all the different forms of relationships, are reflections of these, because they are real. They are reality, spiritual reality. And so, of course, the material world, material nature, is this reflection. It's described so many ways as a reflection that appears in darkness, or sometimes there's the analogy given of the banyan tree whose roots are upward, and the reflection in the pond, right, that's turned upside down. Because this is the way, in other words, everything is there, but it's distorted, or it's backwards. You know, it's like, sometimes Prabhupada used words like inebriation, that it's somehow, or the perverted reflection. It doesn't mean the same way, like something bizarre, but I mean it's perverted in the sense that it's not the true image. It's a changed image of reality that as it is manifested within this material world. So our primary duty, responsibility in life, our purpose in life, the meaning of life, we might say, is to reestablish our loving relationship with Krishna, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to understand that that is the highest relationship, the purest, greatest source of love, and the only real happiness for the living entities. So the process of devotional service, or bhakti yoga, devotion to Krishna, service, it transfers our attachments from material to spiritual. In devotional service, we begin to reestablish our real, original relationship with Krishna. All those things that we're attached to, all those things that we appreciate in the material world, if we simply connect them with Krishna, we do those things for Krishna, they become spiritualized. And using the material energy in Krishna's service transforms that very material energy to spiritual energy. Prabhupada has given an example of, you take the iron rod, you put it in a fire. It's still an iron rod, you pull it out, but it's become like fire because it possesses the qualities of heat and light. So it's iron or steel, but it's also fire. So even these material bodies, material senses, or material minds, which seem so difficult and unsuited for spiritual life, can become spiritualized if they're in association with the fire of Krishna consciousness. In that association, the fire of Krishna consciousness burns off all material aspects of those elements. And even though they may still seem apparently like material energy, material elements, they have become spiritual. So, we establish our relationship with Krishna how? First, through his holy name. In this Kali Yuga, the Sankirtan movement is the process. So we can first recognize a relationship by having a relationship with Krishna's name. And perhaps even before that, a relationship with Krishna's devotees, through the spiritual master or the other devotees. One begins to relate to Krishna that way, through the holy name, through the devotees, through prasadam, in these ways. And then as we begin to understand that Krishna is the father of everyone, we understand our relationship with all living entities. And then we also understand that we cannot actually have a spiritual relationship devoid of God. You can't take God out of relationship and say it's spiritual. I don't believe in God, but I have very spiritual relationships. No, we don't have spiritual relationships. You might have some deep emotional relationships, and they might be very meaningful to you, but they're not truly spiritual unless God is at the center, unless God is part of it. So how are spiritual relationships different than material? I was thinking of a few things. First of all, in a spiritual relationship, a relationship particularly with Krishna, when we think of Krishna and his devotees and Vrindavan, etc., that love is ever increasing. The love in those relationships is ever increasing. It gets more and more. It doesn't come to an end. It doesn't get stale. Where in the material world, what happens to love? It tends to kind of plateau or get stale. And even if, you know, people can manage to get along pretty well, it's sort of just, you know, it's just kind of there after a while, you know, same old, after a while, you know. But it doesn't keep growing and growing and expanding ever blissfully. For most people, I don't think. There's also an absence of envy. In the spiritual world, there's no envy. If somebody else is doing nice service and deeply loving the one I love, then I'm happy. I'm happy that someone is doing nice service for Krishna, not that, oh, I want to take them down because what are they doing? They're after my, you know, after my girlfriend or after my boyfriend. No, you know, they don't, I mean, you know, there's a little bit of transcendental envy. That's a whole other topic, you know. Sometimes it's there in the spiritual world too. Everything is there in the spiritual world, but it's not material envy, not the same. It's also one doesn't change one's feelings. It's not that if one is deeply in love, then you stop being in love. Like, oh, I used to really love Krishna, not so much anymore. No, it's not like that. Or, you know, it almost seems crazy. You know, it is crazy. We're all crazy in this material world, you know. But it happens with people all the time. You know, I've mentioned so many times in here, you all get tired of hearing me about, you know, our 40 to 50% divorce rate, and everybody thinks they're going to be happily ever after. Nobody thinks that their marriage is going to end, but they do. Somehow or another, those loving sentiments that they had, where are they? Somehow they went away. That's material, not spiritual love. And also in spiritual love, there's no personal motivation. This is the big one. All material relationships have some personal motivation. And of course, Prabhupada said the closest thing to a spiritual relationship in the material world is the love of a mother for her child, because it's the least motivated. It's the most pure, because the mother rarely gets much in return, and she'll do anything for the child, regardless of whether it's good for her or not. She'd give up her own life for her child. So that's close to spiritual love, because it has that unmotivated quality. But in the spiritual world, all relationships are like that, and more so, much more so. In other words, that's almost like the beginning point of relationships that are unmotivated. So what does Krishna want? Well, we're very limited, and for us to say what is on Krishna's mind is very difficult for us as limited jivas. However, our acharyas have given us some ideas and some hints as far as how Krishna thinks, and we hear in the 10th canto in the Srimad Bhagavatam, some of Krishna's thoughts are there. One thing we know, that he has a desire to continually increase enjoyment and love and relationship between himself and his devotees. Right? This is part of his nature. Part of his nature is to love and to be loved, and to have those relationships continue to grow. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in Srimad Bhagavatam 9465 purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, but to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he requires the cooperation of his devotees. In Vrindavan, for example, although Lord Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like the coward boys and the gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly most dear to him. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he's unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. Thus, he descends to the material world to induce the non-devotees and rebellious living entities to return home back to Godhead. He requests them to surrender unto him because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. So that's an amazing thing about Krishna. Krishna is self-satisfied, he is Atmarama, as Prabhupada says, and at the same time, his enjoyment is to have loving relationships and to increase those loving relationships, both in quantity and in quality. He wants to have deeper and deeper relationships with his devotees, which means every living entity ultimately, and he wants to have those deeper and deeper. So that's kind of interesting. Actually, in which chapter is it? When Krishna abandons the gopis and Radharani, and then he returns, and then they're asking him questions of what kind of lover he is. Is that 1034? 1034. Yeah, I think it's 34. The gopis ask Krishna, what kind of lover are you? Because they're feeling a little bit irritated. Because the gopis, after all, gave up everything. Everything. They were 100% totally just whatever Krishna you want. You know, I love you so much. They give up their families. They give up their reputation. They give up their homes. Everything. Go out in the middle of the dead of night. These are married women. You know, this is not exactly approved of in that culture. You know, so they give up everything. And then he abandons them. So they say, why would you do this? And they said, what kind of lover are you, actually? And I said, there's three kinds. He says, there's those that are really self-satisfied, that are Atmarama. And there are those that reciprocate in kind, you know, that are equal in their exchanges and reciprocate. And there are the ones who are just simply callous and simply take in a relationship. Which of those are you? It's kind of a trick question. And of course, Krishna went through, I'm not going to get into it, but he went through and explained how he wasn't any of those three. None of them really applied to him. He said, yes, I'm Atmarama, but yet still, he says, you don't see me off meditating, being a yogi in the Himalayas. I'm here involved in so many loving relationships. You know, he's the Rasaraj, king of Rasa. So he's not that. And is he only reciprocate in kind? No. No. Sometimes Krishna will give so much of himself. You know, to us, he gives so much, we can give him back so little. And can you say that he is callous? Never. Never is he callous, because he's always, always looking out for the welfare of every living entity and always reciprocating and always trying to increase that love. Anyway, so we have to understand these relationships properly. These are spiritual relationships that we read about. When we read about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees throughout the Bhagavatam particularly. And it's easy for us to think in terms of material terms, because that's what we're used to. That's what we know. We know what happens in the material world, material relationships. We think, well, it must be kind of like that. And that's what's tricky about it, because it is kind of like that, but not that. Let me explain. Okay, well, let me give you an example. This is from 8th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is from purport 822. Just a little example. When Krishna and Balaram were crawling about Rajabhumi, they were enchanted by the sound of ankle bells. Thus they sometimes followed other people and would enjoy the crawling of Krishna and Balaram and exclaim, oh, see how Krishna and Balaram are crawling. Upon hearing this, Krishna and Balaram could understand that these were not their mothers they were following, and they would return to their actual mothers. Thus, the crawling of Krishna and Balaram was enjoyed by people in the neighborhood, as well as Mother Yashoda and Rohini and the two children themselves. So, in other words, they would realize these weren't their mothers, they'd become frightened and go back to their mothers. You know, it's interesting because in my former lifetime, when I was a professor of developmental psychology, we call these things stranger anxiety and separation anxiety and childhood development, you know. So it looks like, you know, they're kind of like normal children here, doesn't it? They're crawling around. They're getting a little frightened because they recognize someone's not their real mother. They go back to their mother. So, are they playing? Are they appearing as human beings or not? You know, they are and they aren't, aren't they? Because they do appear to act as ordinary children. Why? Because it gives pleasure to the gopis, especially here the elderly gopis, who enjoy their childhood pastimes. In other words, if you remember when they were born in Mathura, Krishna first showed himself to Vasudeva and Devaki as what? Narayan, four-armed horn. Why? He wanted to convince them because he had promised them, I will be your son three times. And so he went to show them, see, here I am, there I am. I have taken birth the third time as your son. And they're all offering prayers, awe and reverential. Then what does he do? Turns back into a baby so they can enjoy the parental rasa of taking care of their little baby. And that deepens their love. Now, when they were in awe and reverence, it wasn't really the same kind of love as when they're just loving their little baby, their child, is it? You see, when Krishna acts like a human-like, it's sweeter. It becomes a sweeter relationship. And he's enjoying it, and his devotees are enjoying it. And they're all enjoying it so much more than if they're always just in awe and reverence. Now, of course, we should be in awe and reverence. This is God. You know, we should not try to falsely become too intimate or anything like that. You know, so this is, in other words, an advanced stage when one has these relationships and realizations. But that's the idea. Krishna enjoys these human-like relationships. But that does not mean that Krishna has become human-like, or he has lost his power, or lost his omnipotence, or lost any of his abilities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. While he's crawling around on Mother Yashoda's floor as a small baby, he's also creating universes, killing demons, you know, incarnating in so many different ways, Ramachandra and Nrsingadev, so many things. All of this happening at once. All of this by Krishna's energy, by Krishna's ability. So, Krishna is the origin of all, and he appears in his original spiritual form. And that's the other thing where people sometimes mistake. They think, oh, Krishna may be God, but then he took birth as a human. No, he was never in a human body. He was in a spiritual, transcendental, Satchitananda body. He says, although I'm unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I'm the Lord of all living entities, I still appear every millennium in my original transcendental form. So this transcendental form indicates his eternal spiritual form. The form that we see as Krishna, consort of Radharani, playing with Balaram and the cowherd boys, this is the original form of Krishna. This is God. And God may have so many other energies, so many expansions. People may say, well, God is actually spiritual energy. He is Brahman. Yes, he is. But the Brahman is emanating from the body of Krishna. Not that Krishna is coming out of the Brahman. This is people's mistake, lack of knowledge. You know? And, you know, all you have to do is actually read the Bhagavad Gita somewhat attentively, especially, of course, under the guidance and care and instruction of a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, and it's so clear. It all becomes very clear when we're guided in spiritual understanding by the Guru. Excuse me. So as Krishna's form is eternal, so his relationships are also eternal. And these Vrindavan pastimes are being enacted eternally in Goloka. They're being enacted on different planets in Gokula. And when he appears in the material world, it's sort of a traveling roadshow, as Prabhupada said, or as you know, one after another in different planetary systems. When he appears as Narayan, with his devotees in Vaikuntha, or his other incarnations, he has eternal pastimes that are there in the spiritual world, as Nrsingadev, as Ramachandra, so many different incarnations. These are eternal. No, this is Krishna's nature. And we are eternal, and we are part of Krishna. We are Krishna's marginal energy, his Jiva Shakti. So the devotee is very dear to Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:17, of these, the one who is in full knowledge and is always engaged in my pure devotional service is the best, for I am very dear to him and he is very dear to me. So this is also the part of the nature of spiritual love and our spiritual family, that it's mutual, that it's reciprocal. There's loving exchanges. Krishna's not a dictator. Krishna is not, you know, I'm God, I'm in charge of the universe, therefore everybody just does what I say, and we all have to do what he says, yes, that's true. But what he says is for our good, and so that we will be happy. He wants us to be happy. He wants to have a loving relationship. He wants us to come back to Him. He wants us to enjoy with Him. It's a mutual relationship. In the 11th canto, chapter 8, it's the story of Pingala. And Pingala says at one point, after she's gone through so much and after she's given up all of her sinful ways and after she's surrendered to Krishna, she says, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is absolutely the most dear one for all living beings because He is everyone's well-wisher and Lord. He is the Supreme Soul situated in everyone's heart. Therefore, I will now pay the price of complete surrender, and thus purchasing the Lord, I will enjoy with Him just like Lakshmi Devi." Now, this was interesting. This was a little different angle. How a pure devotee's love can purchase Krishna. Krishna is actually controlled by the love of his devotee. Now, Krishna's a pretty big controller, isn't he? Kind of like everything. Universes, spiritual worlds, material worlds. Krishna's in control of everything. But yet, he is controlled by the love of his devotee. Think of this story. We're going to be going into Damodar. Well, we're a little late because of Purushottam, aren't we? But next month, we'll be going into the month of Damodar, which is, I think, one of the favorite times for devotees. And, you know, when we do the candles and we sing Damodar Ashtakam, and we remember the beautiful story of Krishna and his mother Yashoda and little Damodar and his being tied up by the ropes. Because it's just such a wonderful, simple lesson. Shukadeva Goswami says, "O Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotee." And that's what he did. He became under the control of Mother Yashoda because she was trying so hard, working so hard that he took pity on her and he let her finally bind him with the ropes of love. So Krishna is that supreme controller, and only the devotee's love can control Krishna, nothing else. No demon can control Krishna, nothing else. Material nature can't control Krishna. Krishna's in control of material nature. He's in control, his maya. But Krishna feels indebted to the devotee's love, as we, of course, also feel so indebted to Krishna's love. We are so indebted to the love of our guru and indebted to the love of Krishna and Radharani and Krishna Balaram and Gorni Thai. But Krishna also feels a little debt to his devotees. I had mentioned before in the 34th, maybe it's the 32nd chapter, okay, of the Srimad Bhagavatam. After the gopis' separation, reunion, and after they ask him their questions, they try to trip him up, he answered them so satisfactorily, and they actually feel kind of bad. And finally, but they still feel a little bit like, well, but he still was a little bit mean to us, you know, even though we understand it. You know, they don't feel that exactly, but you know. And finally, he completely satisfies them, and finally says in 10:32:22, says, "I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma." So Krishna says, not only do I feel indebted to my devotees, but I cannot repay that debt. Now, that's an interesting question. I have was just reading about this, and I hadn't really thought about this before. Most of the rest of you already thought of this, I'm sure. How was Krishna, who's the greatest of everything, creator of everything, how would he be unable to repay a debt? Of course the gopis loved him very deeply, but of course his love is unlimited and fathomless as well. So why would he be indebted to their love rather than the other way around? It's explained. Because the devotees say, the gopis, their love is exclusive. In other words, they only love Krishna. Is Krishna's love exclusive? No. Krishna has to share his love. Doesn't share it, really. Krishna loves every living entity in the universe, right? He has a relationship with every single living entity. So he can't say, I can only love you, this gopi or this coward boy, nobody else. He can't say that. Now, he has unlimited capacity for love, which is, we can't even imagine. He has unlimited capacity. But still, He can't say it's exclusive. Therefore, he says, in one sense, your love is greater than mine, and therefore I'm indebted to you. So, he can't repay his debt. So finally figures out how to repay that debt. How does he do it? Any ideas? How does he repay his great debt to his devotees? By appearing as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Gauranga. It's explained. Because when he appears as Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, he gives Krishna Prema freely to everyone. He liberates the entire universe. He gives his love so freely to people who never even thought about him or cared about him. In this way, and he does it, how? In the mood of Radharani. Coming as Krishna and Radha's mood. Therefore, he repays his mood to the gopis in that way. And repays his debt of love, you know, to all of his devotees. So, anyway, Krishna is quite fantastic. Hard to even understand the intricacies of his loving relationships. So it's natural to have loving relationships, and while we're in this material world, there's naturally going to be affection within our families. So it's not that we say that's bad, that one shouldn't have any affection or relationships, one should only have relationships with Krishna. No, Krishna's never alone. Krishna's always with his devotees. The devotees are together. And we're all part of Krishna's family, and there's a natural affection. In fact, in the early stages of our Krishna consciousness, we may not really perceive Krishna directly so much. It's not so easy to see Krishna. We see Krishna right here in front of us, but not so easy still, you know what I mean, to see Krishna. But we do see Krishna through the eyes of the devotees. We see through the eyes of the guru. We see Krishna through the eyes of the Bhagavatam by hearing and by chanting through the holy name. So in these ways, we start to develop some reciprocation. And we start developing relationship. And the relationship is sadhu sangha. The relationship of devotees is one of the most important principles of Krishna consciousness. So I mentioned this before. As Bhaktivinoda says, we try to not give our hearts to non-devotees. We save our hearts for the devotees. We save our close relationships to those who are also devotees. We may associate with others. We may give them our association. But we try to not give our heart except to other devotees. And those devotee relationships are spiritual relationships to the degree that Krishna is in the center. Degree that they're about Krishna, that Krishna's remembered, that Krishna's served. They're spiritual. Now, can we say all of our relationships with all of our family, everything, they're all completely 100% spiritual? Well, you know, realistically, of course not. We're mixed devotees still. You know, we're not pure yet. So it's a mixture. But it's a process. It's a gradual process that's going ever upward and ever forward. As long as we stick to the instructions of the spiritual master, chanting the rounds, following the principle, there's never any loss. We're always going forward. And those relationships become more and more pure and more sweet. And they get more and more to the essence. And I think this is something that you can see as you've been doing this for many, many years and perhaps been married for, well, maybe 50 years or so and been a devotee for almost 50 years, that the relationships do become more spiritual. And that you understand that it really is about your journey together as devotees of the Lord, your spiritual path to leave this material world and go back home, back to Godhead. So, the basis of service and sadhana and our sacrifice that we must do, and there's always a sacrifice. In fact, Bhagavad Gita 3.11, I was just thinking, actually talks about material, and sometimes material world is spoken about as not being so bad if Krishna's the center. In 3.11, Krishna says, in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yajna, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So in other words, material world is here for two reasons. One, to be able to live in some comfort and happiness while one is performing devotional service, doing sacrifice for Vishnu, and to get out, to achieve liberation. In other words, do your best while you're here, take care of your family nicely, serve Krishna, serve God, make spiritual advancement, and then get the heck out. You know, try to get out of this material world and go back home, back to Godhead. So our goal is to this devotional service and to increase that connection more and more. And we should not see our duties, our family lives, and anything separate from that or a hindrance. We see it as part of our process. It is part of the path, our particular journey in this world, in this lifetime, serving Krishna, serving Srila Prabhupada, and hopefully going back to Krishna at the end of this life. So, thank you all very much. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Serving Krishna, serving Prabhupada,
and hopefully going back to Krishna. Anybody has any questions, comments? Thank you all very much.
Anybody has any questions? Thank you for the class, Prabhu. So we know that Srila Prabhupada has said that there is no love in this material world. He famously said that to a group of hippies in the 60s, which was probably shocking to them. So what is that thing that binds two people together? What is that chemistry? Can you explain what that attachment, very strong attachment, is?
Well, I think you just said it. It's material attachment, right? I mean, what is it that binds people? I think because our absolute strongest spiritual, if we were going to epitomize spiritual world and spiritual relationships, what is the epitome? It's loving relationships with Krishna, right? It's rasa, right? So relationship and love is the strongest. It's the strongest force. So in the material world, the material reflection of that is also going to be the strongest force in the material world. So it's going to be very, very binding because it looks like that thing we're looking for. It kind of looks like it and feels like it. While it's going well, it wears off or runs out, right?
But what is that? Why does it happen with two people? Is it that the other person just is enamored? Or either the other person is feeding our ego so much that
once we decide to leave Krishna and come into this material world, we want to try to enjoy independently. So we have to have those things which are going to bind us to this material world, which are going to make us think that we're our bodies and that we're enjoying independently. We wouldn't be able to enjoy independently of Krishna unless we are enjoying somebody or something. So we end up with these strong relationships and attachments in the material world that become sort of like a substitute for real spiritual life, for our relationship with God. I mean, this could be a... Maybe you have some thoughts on it.
No, not really. It's a little puzzling. I think, you know, the psychology of why two people are so much attached to each other.
Yeah, and it's remarkable how it seems like the material forces are so strong, doesn't it? You know, that just hold us, and grip us.
Yeah. I remember one time Prabhupada was getting massage on the roof, and the two kittens were playing, and they were going, Sutta Kirti Prabhu tell the story. And they were playing, and then they actually jump on Prabhupada's lap. And they thought, oh my God, what is going to happen? The two kittens are playing. So then Prabhupada commented, the reflection of that pure love is still there, you can see. And they thought Prabhupada is going to get upset or something, the kitten is just... But Prabhupada is seeing something else.
I remember that, yeah. You know, Prabhupada saw everything as a learning opportunity, as a way to understand Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. I have a question that did Lord Chaitanya paid off the debts?
I don't know. Well, he said he liberated everyone in the universe. That was probably a good start. I don't know. Maybe not.
interesting point that you brought. Very nice.
I don't know.
Also, another question. Just in the beginning, you said that that sloka 14:4, that he's the seed-giving father, Aum Bija Pradapita. So is that the Bible is like wrongly translated, that they only believe the human has a soul, the other animal and trees, they don't have a soul. So it's not a father of, God is not the father of animal and trees.
I've never quite understood it, to be honest with you. I was never very good at Christian theology. I don't get it. If somebody can explain how there's something about there's a life force, but there's not really a soul or something. I'm not sure, because you can see all of these living entities. They seem very similar to human beings in many ways, right? You know, and I mean, people who have even pets, I mean, they know that they're dogs and cats, or sometimes people with their cow, they know there's consciousness there. Anyone can see it.
The minister on the university church that he says, actually there's no, Jesus, that's what he believes, Jesus teaching, there's no soul in animal at all.
I know, they think that.
I don't know, is it the wrong translation? I was just curious.
Well, you know, I don't want to get, you know, it's like I start acting like I know something about Christian history and philosophy. I don't really, so I'm not going to comment. I have my opinions, but I don't
know. Well,
you
know, I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's like I start acting like I know something about
anyway,
Christian.
It's something to do with the Nicene Councils, I think, where they change things around. You know, some of the early translations, the Bibles had things like transmigration, and you know, it's like things got changed around a lot. Yeah. I think we lost a lot of the true teachings over time. Some of you may know more about them than me. I don't really know.
Maybe that's the reason we keep the Sanskrit and then Prabhupada's translation.
As it is. And yeah, the authenticity is the hallmark of Vaishnavism, when you think about it. Yeah, where else do you see the original Sanskrit text and see the translation? If anybody wants to argue, they can argue about the translation. They think it should be argued, it translates some different way or whatever, but it's all there.
Yeah.
It's all right there. Yeah.
But in Bible, the original Hebrew or Aramaic is not there.
No.
Just English.
And in fact, sometimes it's even, sometimes you'll see, I'll read a commentary where Sanatana Goswami or Jiva Goswami will say, now sometimes you'll see this verse in Bhagavatam written with a different word here.
Yes.
There's two different words, and it could be, but it usually doesn't mean much different. You know, I mean, even if there's even a little discrepancy, Acharyas will point it out. You know, it's not like there's nothing hidden here, you know.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. I mean, we are so blessed to have this incredible philosophy descending thousands and thousands of years through this unbroken line of Acharyas, or Parampara, and it's come to us purely.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I gave a class the other day in Gainesville, and there was a lot of Christian parents of the devotees who attend the class on Tuesday evening. And I thought I'd give it about Christianity and Christ's teachings. And I looked at the book of Matthew, and whether it's translated correctly or not, it's exactly the same philosophy that we have, practically exactly the same. A lot of things are the same. Yeah, look in chapter 5, Matthew. It says, that, you know, whosoever kills will not be shown mercy. And, you know, and then Satan, because we don't believe in Satan, but the teaching's the same. Then Satan took him to a high place and showed him, Jesus, you know, a whole array of material creation, and said, I will give you all of this if you fall down at my feet. So it's kind of like Haridas Thakur or somebody, you know, being tempted, or you know, Kolavit Shrida, or one of Lord Chaitanya's associates. So there's many things. Look at the lilies of the field, for they reap, neither do they toil. But I say unto you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed as one of these. So they do have, you know, even if it's not translated correctly, but they don't see it. That's the problem, because they just don't get it. You know? I mean, some of the parents like the talk, but anyway, as far as Yoruba Prabhu's question, I thought that Prabhupada said that, you know, sex is the main motivation of material life.
So even the animals, you know, they motivate by sex, they have offspring. And if you try to, you know, capture a lion cub, for instance,
even the animals,
you'll be in grave danger. Because, you know, the mother is so attached to the cub, because she's got a cub, because the male lion gave her, implanted the seed. So ultimately, sex is the motivating principle of material life.
That's what I feel. Yep. Okay, we should probably be in class. Yeah, otherwise, Srila Prabhupada. Anyway.